Good evening. Thanks for joining in tonight for our Wednesday wind down. Your chance to breathe deeply, exhale. Try to let go of whatever it is you're carrying around right now. If you'd like to plant your feet on the ground, you're invited to do so. Sometimes it's good just to push against something firm. Breathing deeply. Touching your hand to your heart. You are truly special. Truly loved. Amidst all of your worries and your anxieties, your angries and your grumpies, you're just so beautiful and special. To remember that tonight. And to thank yourself for whatever it is you're doing. You're doing enough. In fact, you're probably doing too much. But just remind yourself, whatever it is you're doing enough. And love yourself a little bit. For me, for you. What this is about, loving ourselves a little more so we can love other people just a little bit more. Imagining a flower right now, kind of just opening up its bloom. Somehow that is signifying me that expression of love, that opening up our arms, welcoming in the stranger, being kind to our neighbors, and in our mind's eye or in real life, giving hugs to our family. It really feels like learn to value just being tender with each other, being vulnerable. Maybe it's kind of like the innocence of a child, but paired with the wisdom of grief. I think we all know how much life can change. I mean, we've seen it in this pandemic. Life can really, really change. And there's some value in just appreciating and savoring it all. So I invite you to imagine what it feels like in your body, your lifelong home, savoring each moment. Whether you're happy or sad, excited or scared, joyful or anxious. You'll feel it all in your body. I think I'm just missing hugging people right now, so I'm feeling like I'm sending everyone virtual hugs, and I can just feel myself squeezing. So we've been reading the first couple chapters of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and Lucy and Edmund have both gone to Narnia at this point. They've come back and are talking with Peter and Susan and the professor. And Edmund is denying that Lucy was ever there and saying that she's telling a lie about it, when in fact Edmund knows very well that Lucy was there, and in fact he was there and has met the White Witch. So they're now back on this side of the door. It goes, the house of the professors, which even he, the professor himself, knew in fact so little about, was so old and famous that people from all over England used to come and ask permission to see it. It was the sort of house that is mentioned in guidebooks and even in histories. Well, it might be, for all manners of stories were told about it, some of them even stranger than the one I am telling you now. Imagine. But when parties of sightseers arrived and asked to see the house, the professor always gave them permission, and the housekeeper showed them around, telling them about the pictures and the armor and the rare books in the library. The housekeeper, Miss MacReady, was not very fond of children and did not like to be interrupted when she was telling visitors all of the many things that she knew. She had said to Susan and Peter almost on the first morning, "And please remember, you're to keep out of the way whenever I'm taking a party around the house." Just as if any of us would want to waste half the morning trailing around with a crowd of strange grown-ups, said Edmund. And that was how the adventures began. A few mornings later, Peter and Edmund were looking at the suit of armor and wondering if they could take it to bits when the two girls rushed into the room and said, "Look out! Here comes the MacReady and a whole gang with her." Sharp's the word. They all ran through the room, off into the other side, and realized that Miss MacReady must be bringing her party of sightseers back up the stairs instead of the front stairs that they had expected. After that, whether it was that they had lost their heads or that Mrs. McCready was trying to catch them or that some magic in the house had come to life and was chasing them into Narnia, they weren't quite sure. Somehow they seemed to find themselves being followed everywhere. Until Susan said at last, "Oh, bother those trippers. Here, let's get into the wardrobe room until they've passed. No one will follow us in there." But the moment they were inside, they heard voices in the passage and then saw someone fumbling at the door and then saw the handle turning. "Quick, there's nowhere else," and flung open the wardrobe. All four of them bundled inside and sat there amidst the dark and the coats and the warmth of the fur. You should never shut yourself in the wardrobe. Peter remembered that just a little bit too late. "I wish the McCready would hurry up and take all these people away. I'm getting horribly cramped. And what a filthy smell of camphor. I expect these pockets of the coats are full of it to keep away the moths. There's something sticking in my back. And isn't it cold? Now that you mention it, it is cold," said Peter. "And it's all wet too. What's the matter with this place? I'm sitting on something wet. It's getting wetter every minute." "Let's go out. They're gone," said Edmund. "Oh, I'm sitting on a tree. And look, it's getting lighter over there. Oh, Jove, you're right. And look there and there. It's trees all around. And this wet stuff is snow. Why, I do believe we've got into Lucy's woods after all." There was no mistaking it. All four children stood blinking in the daylight of a winter day. Behind them were coats hanging on pegs. In front of them were snow-covered trees. Peter turned at once to Lucy. "I apologize for not believing you. I'm sorry. Will you shake hands?" "Of course," said Lucy, and did. "And now, what do we do next?" "Do? Why, we go and explore the woods, of course." "Ugh, it's pretty cold. What about putting on some of these coats?" "They're not ours," said Peter doubtfully. "I am sure nobody would mind. It isn't as if we wanted to take them out of the house. We shan't even take them out of the wardrobe. I never thought of this, Sue." "Of course, now that you put it that way, I see. No one could say you bagged a coat as long as you leave it in the wardrobe where he found it. I suppose this whole country is, in fact, a wardrobe." They immediately carried out Susan's very sensible plan. The coats were rather too big for them, so they came down to their heels and looked more like royal robes than coats when they had put them on. But they all felt a good deal warmer, and each thought that the others looked better in their new getup and more suitable to the landscape. "We can pretend we're Arctic explorers. This is going to be pretty exciting enough without any pretending." There were these heavy, darkish clouds overhead, and it looked as if it might snow more before night. "I say, oughtn't we to be bearing a little more to the left? That is, if we're aiming for the lamp post." He had forgotten for the moment that he must pretend he's never been to the woods before. Everybody stopped and stared at him. "So you really were here. That time Lucy said she met you, and you made out she was telling lies? Well, of all the little poisonous beasts, Edmund seemed to be the worst of them." Edmund found himself sticking up for himself, saying, "Well, you're just self-satisfied prigs." Lucy and Susan cut in, "Where are we going anyway?" "I think Lucy ought to be the leader. Goodness knows she deserves it. Where will you take us, Lou?" "What about going to see Mr. Tumnus? He's the very nice fawn I told you all about." Everybody agreed and they all went off. Walking briskly and stamping their feet, Lucy proved a good leader. At first she wondered whether she would be able to find the way. But she recognized an odd-looking tree in one place and a stump in another, and brought them on to where the ground became uneven and into the little valley at last to the very door of Mr. Tumnus's cave. But there a terrible surprise awaited them. The door had been wrenched off its hinges and broken to bits. Inside the cave was cold and dark and damp feel of smell and a place that they had not been for several days. Snow had drifted in from the doorway and was heaped on the floor, mixed with something black, which turned out to be the charred sticks and ashes from the fire. Someone had apparently flung it about the room and then stamped it out. The crockery lay smashed on the floor, and the picture of the faun's father had been slashed into shreds with a knife. This is a pretty good washout. Not much good coming here. What's this? Noticing a piece of paper crumpled on the floor. Is there anything written on it? Yes, I think there is, but I can't read it in this light. Let's get out into the open air. They went, and Peter read what was found. The former occupant of these premises, Faun Tumnus, is under arrest and awaiting his trial on a charge of high treason against Her Imperial Majesty Jadis, Queen of Narnia, Chatelaine of Caer Paravel, Empress of the Lone Islands, etc. Also of comforting her said Majesty's enemies, harboring spies, and fraternizing with humans. Signed, Fenris Ulf, Captain of the Secret Police. Long live the Queen! Children stared at each other. I don't know that I'm going to like this place after all. Who is the Queen, Lou? Do you know anything about her? She isn't a real queen, Lucy said. She's a horrible witch, a white witch, and everyone, all the wood people, hate her. She has made an enchantment over the whole country so that it's always winter here and never Christmas. I wonder if there's any point in going on. I mean, it doesn't feel particularly safe here, and it looks as if it won't be much fun either. And it's getting colder every minute, and we've brought nothing to eat. What about just going home? But we can't, said Lucy. Don't you see? We can't just go home, not after this. It's all on the account that the poor faun has gotten into this much trouble. He hid me from the witch and showed me the way back. That's what it means by comforting the queen's enemies and fraternizing with the humans. We simply must try to rescue him. A lot we could do, Edmund said. We haven't even got anything to eat. Shut up, you, Peter said. What do you think, Susan? I have a horrid feeling that Lou is right. I don't want to go a step further, and I wish we'd never come. But I think we must try to do something for Mr. whatever his name is. I mean, the faun. That's what I feel, too. I'm worried about not having food with us. I'd vote for going back, getting something for larder. Only there does it seem that there's going to be any certainty of getting this country again once you've gotten out of it. I think we'll have to go on. So do I, said both the girls. If only we knew where the poor chap was imprisoned. They were all still, wondering what to do next. Look, there's a robin with such a red breast. It's the first bird I've seen here. I say, I wonder if birds can talk in Narnia. It almost looks as if it wanted to say something to us. She turned to the robin and said, please, can you tell us at all where Tumnus the faun has been taken to? As she said this, she took a step towards the bird. At once, it hopped away, but only as far to the next tree. There it perched, looked at them very hard as if it understood all they'd been saying. Almost without noticing that they had done so, the four children went a step or two nearer to it. At this, the robin flew away again to the next tree and once more looked at them very hard. Do you know, I really do believe he means us to follow him. I have an idea he does. What do you think, Peter? Well, we might try it out. The robin appeared to understand the matter thoroughly. It kept going from tree to tree, always a few yards ahead of them, but always so near that they could easily follow it. In this way, it led them on slightly downhill. Wherever the robin alighted, a little shower of snow would fall off the branch. Presently, the clouds parted overhead, and the winter sun came out, and all the snow grew dazzlingly bright. They had been traveling in this way for about half an hour, with the two girls in front, when Edmund said to Peter, If you're still not too high and mighty to talk to me, I've something to say which you'd better listen to. What is it? Hush, not so loud. There's no good frightening the girls, but have you realized what we're doing? What? We're following a guide we know nothing about. How do we know which side that bird is on? Why shouldn't it be leading us to a trap? That's a nasty idea. Still, a robin, you know. They're good birds in all the stories I've ever read. I'm sure a robin wouldn't be on the wrong side. If it comes to that, which is the right side? How do we know the fawns are right in the way that they've been talking about the queen and that she's the wrong one? We don't really know anything about either. The fawn saved Lucy. He said he did, but how do we know? And there's another thing too. Has anyone the least idea way of going home from here? Great Scott, I hadn't thought of that. There's no chance of dinner. While the two boys were whispering behind, the two girls suddenly cried, "Oh, the robin, it's flown away, and it's out of sight." There's something moving among the trees over there to the left. They all stared as hard as they could, and no one felt very comfortable at all. There it goes again. I saw it this time too. It's still there. It's just gone behind the big tree. What is it? Asked Lucy, trying very hard not to sound so nervous. Whatever it is, it's dodging us. It's something that doesn't want to be seen. Let's go home. And then nobody said it out loud. Everyone suddenly realized the same fact that Edmund had whispered to Peter at the end of the last chapter. They were lost. What's it like? Look, quick, there it is. It's a little animal. This time they all saw it, a whiskered, furry face, which looked out from them behind the tree. But this time it didn't immediately draw back. Instead, the animals put its paw against its mouth, just as humans put their finger on their lips when they are signaling to you to be quiet. Then it disappeared again. The children all stood holding their breaths. A moment later, the stranger came out from behind the tree, glanced all around as if it were afraid someone was watching, said, "Hush," and made signs to join them in the thicker bit of wood where it was standing, and then once more disappeared. "I know what it is. It's a beaver. I saw the tail. It wants us to go in, and it was warning us not to make a noise. I know. The question is, do we go in or do we not? What do you think, Lucy?" "I think it's a nice beaver." "Yes, but how do we know? Shan't we have to risk it? I mean, it's no good just standing here, and I want something for dinner." At this moment, the beaver popped again its head out from behind the tree and beckoned earnestly to come on. "Come, come. Well, let's give it a try. Everyone keep close together. We ought to be a match for one beaver if it turns out to be an enemy." So the children all got close together and walked up to the tree and in behind it. And sure enough, they found the beaver. But it still drew back, saying to them in a hoarse, throaty whisper, "Further in, come further in, right in here. We're not safe in the open." Only then it had led them into a dark spot where four trees grew so close together that their boughs met and the brown earth and pine needles could be seen underfoot because no snow had been able to fall there. Did the beaver begin to talk? "Are you sons of Adam and the daughters of Eve?" "We're some of them," said Peter. "Shh, not so loud, please. We're not even safe here." "Why, who are you afraid of? There's no one here but ourselves." "There are the trees," said the beaver. "They're always listening. Most of them are on our side, but there are trees that would betray us to her. You know who I mean." And nodded its head several times. "If it comes to talking about sides, how do you know you're a friend?" "Not meaning to be rude, Mr. Beaver, but you see, we're strangers." Quite right," said the beaver. "Here is my token." With these words, it held up to them a small little white object. They all looked at it in surprise, until suddenly Lucy said, "Oh, of course, it's my handkerchief, the one I gave to poor Mr. Tumnus. That's right. Poor fellow, he caught wind of the arrest before it actually happened and handed this over to me. He said that if anything happened to him, I must meet you here and take you to the... Here, the beaver's voice sank into silence and it gave one or two mysterious nods, then signaling to the children to stand as close as possible. They say Aslan is on the move, perhaps has already landed. Now, a various curious thing had happened. None of the children knew who Aslan was any more than you do. But the moment the beaver had spoken these words, everyone felt quite different. Perhaps it has sometimes happened to you in a dream that someone says something which you don't understand, but in the dream it feels as if it had some enormous meaning, either a terrifying one which turns the whole dream into a nightmare, or else a lovely meaning too lovely to put into words, which makes the dream so beautiful that you remember it all your life and are always wishing you could get into that dream again. It was like that now. At the name of Aslan, each one of the children felt something jump inside of him. Edmund felt a sensation of mysterious horror. Peter felt suddenly brave and adventurous. Susan felt as if some delicious smell or some delightful strain of music had just floated by her. And Lucy got the feeling you have when you wake up in the morning and realize that it was the beginning of the holidays or the beginning of summer. As we close tonight's reading, I want to send each of us off with a hope we can all feel our coziest tonight, feel as if we're waking up in the morning, realizing it's the beginning of holidays or the beginning of summer, or in our case, the beginning of fall. May you take comfort in the dark. May you find warmth in the cold, and may you find delight in the rain.